Thank you, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. Welcome to the show. How do you reach us? 312-981-7200 gets it done. Wendy, if there was any doubt in your mind, even the smallest, slightest, most minute bit of doubt that your husband loved you, you just proved to me once and for all that he doesn't just love you, he super loves you.
I know, and again, I feel guilty. I feel guilty about everything, but this I really feel guilty about.
Please explain.
Jimmy Mack does a podcast called Rebel Force Radio with his partner, Jason Swank.
The number one Star Wars podcast, I believe, in the world, if not the galaxy.
Right? It is.
It's the number one rated. People who love Star Wars, that's their one-stop shopping listening headquarters for all things SW.
And people who are not so 100% into Star Wars don't really understand how they can do a weekly show and still have it be fresh and informative. But it certainly is.
Well, remember when you and I had our Miss Congeniality podcast and we thought, well, this will last forever. And two episodes in, we said, we have to find something new because not enough people want to talk about it.
There's a big event happening on the 15th, and I believe the 14th is like the opening night of a new Star Wars movie, which to Jim is like the greatest thing on earth.
Right.
And who would have thought when he was a little kid loving Star Wars that movies would keep coming out?
Right.
I certainly didn't.
This is the ninth of the Star Wars movies.
Is it?
Yes.
What's this one called?
Star Wars 2 Electric Boogaloo. I'm not sure what this one's called.
I don't know either. I just know it's big news to Star Wars fans. And yeah. Star Wars fans, there are many.
Yeah.
They are loyal.
Yeah.
They're a loyal bunch of people.
Of course.
And they are so excited because the new movie's coming out.
Yes.
And I know Dean is going to L.A. to see the screening of the movie, like the whole red carpet thing.
Yeah.
And interview celebrities. And a couple of days ago, I was in Jim's home studio in the basement where Rebel Force Radio is done. And I'm looking at an email. And I said, what's that? And it's an invitation to the screening of the Star Wars movie in L.A.
Oh, wow.
And I went, oh, my God. And he goes,
that's a dream come true for him.
Oh, totally. I said, oh, when is that? He goes, can't go. I said, what do you mean you can't go? He goes, you're having your knee surgery. You're having your knee replaced.
The same day?
I cannot go. Yes.
Was he even going to tell you that he got this coveted invitation?
No.
He wasn't even going to tell you because he knew that you would say, you go to this. This is more important.
Actually, I was ready to do that, and the wheels started turning in my head, like maybe my sister can take me.
Uh-huh.
And
Bill and I can take
you. Yeah, Steve and I would love to take you.
Yeah, I'll do the drop-off. You do the pickup.
All right.
Because then you don't have to hear about it.
Drop-off is really early, though. Thursday morning, I have to be there at 6 a.m.
Oh, perfect. Then I could still be at work.
All right. And then pickup would be Saturday, probably about noon.
I got something.
Come on, Bill.
I can't.
All right.
He'll be recovering from his colonoscopy.
Yes.
I'll pick you up, too.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, he didn't even ask me.
He didn't even respond.
He just said I can't do it.
This is like an O. Henry story.
I know. I kind of feel really super bad.
Is your hair shorter?
I don't
Did
get
you
it.
Shave off your locks so that he could get an invite to the Star Wars premiere?
I don't get it.
That's all right. It's an O. Henry story.
Oh, okay.
All right. So
he does love me.
So he's not going to go because he knows it's more important to you that he be by your side for this surgery.
Well, he's not really going to be by my side. It would be nice if I saw him after recovery, but...
you'll see him enough to make this...
I've already told him the hospital's so far away. It's in Cleveland. It's not, but it's really far. I said, you guys don't have to come. Seriously, I'm actually looking forward to some, you know, really heavy-duty physical therapy and catching up on my Candy Crush, which I haven't been able to do.
Yeah.
They have Wi-Fi and everything at the hospital.
It's a big-time hospital. All right, so if it was up to you, and did he leave it up to you? Or
no,
did he say
he left
it up to himself?
It was best that he just said, I can't do it. Plus, he doesn't... Then he'd have to, you know, pay for a hotel, and it's coming at a time. And I said, well, Kevin Richter and Sarah are there. You could stay with them.
You just offered their apartment to your husband. That was nice.
I'm sure they'd take
him
in. He has friends in L.A. I have several friends that he could stay with.
Yeah.
He didn't even pursue it, which makes me feel really bad.
Mm.
Like, if I was him, I would have dangled it over my head.
Mm-hmm. Like, this is valuable.
Look what I got an invite to.
Right.
Too bad I can't. He wasn't even going to tell me. I saw it on his screen, on his computer.
Oh.
Maybe he's just very crafty and he didn't get the invite.
Right.
No, I was looking at it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, he could have faked it like a fake website.
Well, he could have.
I wouldn't say that of Jim.
He could have.
Well, yeah, I guess he does love me.
Wow. That's tough.
That is love, man.
Is he going to be able to, because this is opening night, and I know how much this means to him, so even though he can't go to Los Angeles, is he going to find a way to slip away and see it locally?
Yes, he has a bunch, like 100 listeners who are going to Hollywood Boulevard in wherever that is, Woodridge.
Yeah.
And listeners of his Rebel Force Radio are all going to watch it Thursday night. So that was another thing. When I was going to have my knee surgery on the 14th, he goes, yeah, I can't help you.
Oh.
But that, at least he was local, so right. If something happened, he could be paged.
Right, he's local, like your anesthesia.
Yeah, right.
So I was telling Steve this before the show. With the other Star Wars movies, I've seen each of them on opening night, opening day or opening night. And this one's coming around, and I had no plans to see it anytime near opening day.
Don't you have a friend that you usually go see these things with?
Yeah. So for a long time, it was my brother and a couple of our friends from childhood, and we would always go together as a group. And then in the last two movies, that didn't happen because everybody's kind of spread out and stuff. But my friend Brian said to me yesterday, and I saw the last movie with Brian and another friend of ours, a couple other friends of ours. So Brian said, hey, I've got a ticket for you for 2 weeks from now. And I said, for what? And he goes, come on. I had no idea. I totally forgot that there was a new Star Wars movie coming up. I had no plans to see it on opening day. And I said to Steve earlier today, I don't know what's happened to me. I used to be able to count the minutes until the new Star, like in 3,806 minutes, the new Star Wars movie's out. This time, I don't know the title of it. I don't know what day it's coming out.
I know why.
Why?
Because you haven't liked the last ones.
I think that's a big part of it, is that they just go right through me, which I could use for my colonoscopy.
18th or 19th?
This is the movie comes out on the 15th.
No, I meant the movie.
Oh, the 9th. It's the 9th movie.
You haven't liked the last ones, the last few.
Five. Yeah.
I really enjoyed the last one a lot.
Yeah.
And this is coming from, and maybe this is why I liked it. I am not a Star Wars connoisseur.
Right.
So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I almost feel somebody who's more, although Jim liked it too.
Yeah.
I don't know, Bill. You just lately have not liked any movie you've gone to see. Not even Star Wars.
No, it's the big blockbuster movies that have always disappointed
me.
The smaller movies with lower expectations, I come out going, now that's the way a movie is.
You're but growing up.
I guess I am.
That little kid in you doesn't care about the big blockbusters anymore.
I think that's why the last five Star Wars movies have not appealed to me, is that the first three were so filled with magic and wonderment. And it just seems like that has just all gone away, you know? And I don't know, I can't put my finger on it, like how exactly that went away, but it did. It just, for me anyway, it just went away. It used to be like when they would show clips for an upcoming Star Wars movie, my friends and I would deliberate on every second of the clip. We'd go, that stormtrooper, he's not white, he's wearing red. Why? Is he a better stormtrooper? Is he angry? Is he bleeding? What's wrong with him? Why is he all red?
Okay, how many years ago was this that you stayed and checked out the trailer?
Like in high school and in college. But like now, I don't even remember what happened in the last couple. Like I sat through them, and when it was over, my head just, it was like a switch. It just clicked off. It's like, okay, you saw it, and then it clicked off.
I'm like that with every movie I see.
Really?
I can't remember anything.
Is it a feeling that they're cashing in now more than ever?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. That's what I feel like. And I don't know how it...
It does okay at the box office,
oh,
so you're one
so
of the few
good.
That feels
I know.
That way.
But like the other ones, I saw the first three Star Wars movies like 6 or 7 or 8 times each.
Again, how old were you?
High school and in college. But then like the last ones, I need to see the last one again just to know what happened to see the new one, because I don't remember anything that happened.
There were stars and there were wars.
And I know a major player is sadly no longer with us. I remember that.
Yeah, I don't.
You don't remember
I
that?
I don't really remember that.
Yeah.
You've turned the corner to crotchety. You're at the corner of crotchety and...
That's where my Walgreens is located.
And colonoscopy.
Crotchety and disappointed. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then there's more show. We're at 312-981-7200. If you would like to participate, we'd love to hear from you. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. I like DomCom better. It's more personable.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't you think? It's more friendly.
All right, well, the new Star Wars movie is coming out. Boy, I don't remember the title of it.
Yeah, I don't either.
Wars.
Oh, you guys.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Like, there was a time where I wouldn't have not only known the title, I would have known, like, who did the costume design, who built the sets. I would have known all that stuff. I just know it's one of the Star Wars movies. That's it. That's all I know.
Oh, boy. It is called The Last Jedi.
Yeah, that's it.
I think we have Why are you giggling?
We have a prize
in
for you, Wendy. Hold on. Jasmine's going to find a prize for you.
Yes. I don't think that's it.
No,
that is it.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Aha, uh-huh. Laugh at yourself.
It's The Last Jedi.
Well, what was the movie before that?
The First Jedi. The Other Jedi.
Yet Another Jedi.
Yep.
Okay.
December 15th.
So this is like, it's like Last of the Mohicans, but in outer space. Is that what this is like? Because I'm in. If that's the case, I'm in.
I think it's supposed to be dark.
Oh.
So maybe you should see it.
All right. I'll wear my spelunking hat. Wendy, guess
what?
My spelunking hat. Guess what? Over at Time Magazine, they have announced the short list for their 2017 Person of the Year. So in the old days of the Person of the Year, they would just tell you who the Person of the Year was. But starting a couple of years ago, they gave you 8 or 9 names of people who could potentially be the Person of the Year, so you could kind of think about it for a while.
Is this when Donald Trump, our president, tweeted back, yeah, I'm good, because he was probably going to be it?
He was it last year. He won it last
year.
Well,
he should have, to be honest
with
you.
Without a doubt. And actually, I'll tell you who the nominees are this year. He should probably get it again this year, because can you think of another person who has been more impactful, either good or bad? Can you remember a day in the last year where you've gone somewhere and somebody hasn't said something about Donald Trump? Maybe really good, maybe really bad, maybe a little bit of both. He's you can't escape him. You can't.
He should get it again. He really should get it again.
I think he should. I think you should.
Because when you said it's not necessarily a person who has done wonderful things, it could be either or.
It goes to the person who has the most impact on society, on the world. So in the past, you've had people like Adolf Hitler has been the Person of the Year from Time Magazine. Joseph Stalin has been the Person of the Year. The Ayatollah Khomeini has been the Person of the Year. I mean, it goes to, and you always have to explain to people, because whenever somebody really negative is named this, people go, oh, well, that guy? But really, Donald Trump deserved it.
Did you read the list yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I have it here. I will tell you who they are. So they've narrowed it down to 10 this year. These are the 10 finalists. One of them will be a Person of the Year, according to Time Magazine. Number one is Jeff Bezos. He is the CEO of Amazon. Doesn't do anything for you?
I mean, yeah, I love Amazon, but yeah, I don't know.
I think the interesting thing with Amazon and with Jeff Bezos running Amazon is that when they first started, they were losing money regularly, and they knew that was going to happen. But on every order, they lost money until they could figure out
their
system.
They stayed true, though.
Yeah.
Look at them
now.
Now
they're doing
wow.
pretty good.
I'm going to name my next kid that. No, I'm not going to
have Bezos?
Amazon. I like Bezos better.
That's a great name.
Baby Bezos.
Baby Bezos. The Dreamers. So those are the activists that stormed Trump Tower. Those are the Dreamers. Patty Jenkins. Does that name mean anything to you? I'll give you a hint. She was the first woman director. I'm trying to remember what the total was. I want to say 100
Wonder
million.
Woman.
Yeah, she directed Wonder Woman, and she was the first woman director in history to helm a movie that made over $100 million.
Put her on Variety, not Time.
Yeah, that was such a stretch for me, that one.
That would be, of the names that I'm about to say, she would come in 10th for me, because that, although that is a huge achievement, that's not enough to be Person of the Year, I don't think. Do you, Steve?
No,
I think that's great.
No.
That's great that she pulled that off, but I don't think that's enough to be Person of the Year. The next name is the one who, if not Donald Trump, this would be the other guy who I would give it to. Kim Jong-un. Lil' Kim. Because
I think he should get it.
Not
Boy,
only,
that would push Donald Trump over the edge.
That's another reason to give it to him.
No, because then World War III will happen.
Oh, okay. That's
so don't give it,
give
to,
it
him.
To him. Right. Give it to Bezos, just to screw with both of them. Colin Kaepernick is on the list. What do you think?
you know what? Yeah.
Maybe.
You know what? Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe. The Me Too movement. Now, this is the most recent one. This has just sprung up in the last, you know, 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh, that is such the winner. Say no more.
Do you think so?
Absolutely.
It has been a huge story, Steve, but the problem with this one is, even though it's been extremely impactful, this has only been a story for a month, even though it's taken time
of
to brew.
Of the year. Yeah,
right.
I kind of think.
I don't know if it's got enough to make it.
You've got the Bill Cosby stuff. You've got no.
I think you just put Weinstein on the cover.
Well, nobody individually is named. So
a montage of people,
right?
Here's the thing.
Yeah.
Okay. The president came out and pulled that sort of preemptive. They really want me to be it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one. They don't want to give it to him. No.
I don't think they do.
But there are so many people who follow him on Twitter and who support him that totally believed that.
Right. Right.
Okay, but they're not voting. I mean, it still is an editorial board or someone choosing
right.
the person. He was the person of the year last year. You can make a great case that he could be the person of the year this year.
No repeats.
But they don't really want to repeat. They certainly don't want to do it after he pulled that on him.
But
so
Steve,
I kind of take him out of the running, and I think the Me Too thing has transformed, has completely taken over everything we talk about. I mean—
But Colin Kaepernick was the big thing before that.
He'd be a great one too, but I don't think he's been. I don't think he's as likely of a choice.
But with Trump last year, he got it solely on the fact that it was such an unlikely candidacy, right?
Yeah, well,
the mere fact that he ran
and won.
So that was the story. So this year, the story is now he's in office. Look at all the things that he's either been responsible for.
No, I get that. I mean, I'm not saying he wouldn't. He doesn't qualify for the choice.
But
I'm just saying, if you think of all the things working here,
right.
I don't think they're likely to give it to him again.
It is hard to repeat because of the salary cap. Robert Mueller is on the list, the short list of Time Magazine's potential people of the
year. That's interesting.
The Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. Donald Trump, the aforementioned Donald Trump. And then the last one is the President of China, President Xi Jinping.
Boy, these are tough ones. The Me Too is the most important to me and to everyone else because this is quite a thing that's rolling right now. But again, it happened just so recently
that it didn't dominate the whole year. It's been in the last 5 weeks. It's been an everyday grind.
I'm going Me Too.
You're going Me Too, Steve. Which one would you choose? You have one vote.
It's Me Too.
You Too, Bill.
Yes, the band You Too. It's so funny. I don't want it to be Donald Trump, but I do think that if you look at everything that's happened this year, he has been the most impactful person. The Me Too movement is so important, but I really think that that's dominated 1/10 or 1/11 of the year, whereas Trump has been a constant, you know?
But it's the most impactful thing
yeah.
of the year, too.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll
Very
have
tough.
To see. We have to take a break. We're so late, Bill.
All right. Some news next, and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Is it just me, or did that screaming, that yelling sound a little weak?
Just a little weak. Yeah. You notice that?
Yeah.
I wonder what's up with that.
It's time to partake in Sopel Says with Brent Sopel, former Chicago Blackhawk defenseman. 12-year NHL veteran. Brent, I got to tell you, last night's game, you've got Forsberg in the net. What did he stop? 21 out of 22 shots. Where were his teammates?
Yeah, you know what? First, you got to give him credit. He played well back-to-back with Corey Crawford being on the IR. You know, the kid got a chance. And, you know, as a player, you want a chance. And then it's up to you to perform, and he did that. And you know, playing against a really good LA Kings team, who are all you know playing at the best that they are have been in a long, long time. But you know, for me, it's there's a little bit of work ethic. You know, a lot of it, you know, concerning point to me is faceoffs. You know, Jonathan Toews is one of the best in the league at almost 57%.
I can't believe how fast Taser is with those things. I mean, it barely hits the ice.
You know, it's a key component. It's a skill, and he's worked really, really hard on it. And he's one of the best in the league. So, Even if he's not putting up the points, he's got 18 points right now. He wins those faceoffs. But it takes more guys than that. And, you know, everybody else is below 50%. And, you know, Nisimov's at, you know, 48. But after that, you got Brandon Saad, who doesn't take a lot of faceoffs, but he's at 31. Ryan Hartman, who's a centerman, he's at 41. You know, when you win a faceoff, you have possession of the puck. Now, they're not winning a lot of faceoffs. So the Blackhawks are built for, you know, possession, puck possession. If you don't win faceoffs, you don't have that puck possession. And, you know, that's one thing that's concerning me, and that goes hand-in-hand with the secondary scoring. You know, there isn't that secondary scoring these last couple of games because they're not winning those faceoffs and not starting with the puck.
Brent, let's talk about this. This was mentioned before, during, and after this last stretch of games for the Blackhawks where they have 5 games in 8 days or something like that. So everybody said, yeah, you get tired. Let's talk about that. Even though you certainly have a day or two to unwind, it really gets very grueling when you have that many games in such a short span of time, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, and, you know, first off, I love all the NFL fans. Oh, you know, the quick turnaround, the Sunday, Thursday games, too short. Wow, those guys just played 3 games in 4 nights, 5 and 8. You know, it's obviously physically exhausting, but it's a lot more mentally exhausting. You have to be ready to go on, even in between those short turnarounds. When, you know, you fly back, you know, from Dallas, you get to the rink, you've got video on what you want to do systematically, power play, penalty kill. You got to get ready on a back-to-back situation. So mentally, it's much more grueling than physically, but it's demanding. It's no excuse. Everybody's got to play the 82 games, but it definitely wears on you when you play stretches in 5 and 8, you know, 3 games in 4 nights. You know, and some of these guys that have a ton of miles on them, you know, the guys that won, you know, 3 Stanley Cups, you got Brent Seabrook, who only has, 9 points. You got Duncan Keith, who doesn't have a goal yet. He's got 14 assists. Duncan Keith is a -7. These guys are, you know, it's a ton of miles and a ton of hockey to play in a short period of time.
And Duncan Keith, come on, he plays more minutes in a game than anyone else. And I realize that back-to-back games are going to give you fatigue, but there's your excuse. Then before it was like the players are thinking too much. What's our next excuse?
Well, you know, I got plenty of excuses. But that's exactly it. They are just excuses. You've got to find a way to go out there and get it done. And I'd like to see more of a 60-minute effort from all guys. You know, you can't win in this league anymore with one line or one and a half lines. If you don't have, you know, 18 skaters going from top to bottom every single night, you can't have anybody being passengers. And there was a couple times in the Dallas game, you know, out battled for pucks. You've got to win those little things. And the Blackhawks are on the outside looking in right now, and it's going to be a battle. This league in the Western Conference and the Central Division is one of the best, and it's not easy. You know, when you're a championship team caliber and you've won Stanley Cups the way Blackhawks have, you have a bullseye on your chest every single night. So if you're not ready, the teams are going to take advantage of you.
How did the Blackhawks approach the next several games without Corey Crawford? He's on injured reserve for a while. So what do the Blackhawks do differently, Brent?
Nothing, you know, because, you know, you take the league's last 2 games. Forsberg did what he had to do. You can't worry about who's in nets. You got to play the system. And at the end of the day, you got to go out and work hard. That's it. Work ethic is everything. You got to get the puck, you know, deep, 200 feet from the net. Hang on to it and outwork them. I don't care who you are, what team you are. You need to work for 60 minutes. Nothing comes easy anymore. You need a lot more from some of the younger guys. You know, obviously DeBrincat is, you know, he's got 19 points right now. He's done his job. But Nick Schmaltz needs to be better. Brandon Saad needs to be better. Richard Panik, he's been out to lunch, so he needs to wait.
Yeah, where's he been?
You know what? He's been packing his lunch somewhere. Panik. It's just a lot of guys need to give a lot more, and just like I said, you can only have a certain amount of guys pulling the rope. You're not going to win. They need everybody going.
I'm not one of those fans that hates on the team. I mean, I love my Blackhawks and I will support them, but I'm just curious with the talent that we have on this team and all the switching around in the lines, is Coach Q not giving them enough time on the lines? Because I just feel like something's, what's the problem with all this talent? We shouldn't be having this much trouble.
Well, you're right. You know, everybody has their opinion. Joe Quenneville is a mastermind, one of the best. That's why he's the second winningest coach in history.
Amazing.
Finding combination that works, and he's not afraid to juggle guys around because, you know, at this point in time, nobody has found that right chemistry. You know, nobody has clicked. He can read personalities, and he could read guys on the bench better than anybody. That's what I'm really amazed about, how Joel Quenneville is so good at that. So when he sees a combination that starts clicking, he's not going to change that, but he hasn't found that yet. And I know that's why he's doing it, to find some consistency out of whatever those lines are, because right now nothing clicking.
But how much time do you give them? Because, you know, I mean, at some point you think, okay, this line's not clicking. We got to change it up a little bit. And Coach Q does a great job with that. But maybe that next game was the game that the chemistry was going to happen. I guess that's a tough call.
Yeah, you're 100%. It is a very, very tough call. And as a coach, that's what you you go back and forth on, okay, if I do change the lines, is it going to work? Oh, what if I leave it? Maybe it's going to work. So, you know, it's a very stressful job. And as being the head coach of the Chicago Blackhawks, these fans expect to win every night, and he expects to win, and the organization expects to win. So that's a tough call that they have every single day, going, all right, who do we put in? Who do we keep together? Do we not? It's not easy. They're putting a ton of pressure on themselves, and that doesn't help either. But they have to find a way to get out of this, sooner rather than later.
Yeah,
Brent. If you look at the Blackhawks' wins, three of their last four wins have been by three or more goals. Their last six losses have been by either one goal or two goals. How frustrating is that to keep coming up so close, so close, so close, and not walk away with a win?
Well, you know, the biggest thing is that you have to find a way to win those close games. You know, that's the difference between, you know, making the playoffs and not making those playoffs. Okay, great. Every single team in the league can win when you score three, four, five goals.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
It's finding a way to win those close games, those one-goal games. You squeak out a tie to get that extra point. That's the difference. You know, back in the day, we're finding ways to win. Right now, we're not finding it. So it's that little mental fatigue. You know, you got to bear down in those key situations. You got to know the time on the clock. You got to know who you're out with. Is it an offensive draw? Is it not? So it's those little things, the details that come into play in those one-goal games.
I hate to say this, but I have a feeling I know what is hurting them. It's the new sweaters that they have. If you look at the neckline, it looks like they have little Catholic schoolgirl white collars on their red jerseys. It's like a weird little thing now.
Is that what it is, Brent?
It's not a V-neck anymore.
Collars?
Look at it next time.
Yeah.
You're going to look at it and you're going to go, oh, they look like little Catholic schoolgirls.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a typical woman question. It's the same thing, NCAA basketball.
Oh,
I'm going to pick
on
cute uniforms to go on. Oh, the cute guy? Yeah, I'm going to go with him. He's cuter.
I'm telling you, next time you look
that's
at them,
what it is,
you're
huh?
going to see the little schoolgirl collars.
All right.
Well, I'm looking at one of you. I'm not thinking about the schoolgirl collars when I'm looking at a hockey jersey. Just saying.
All right, Brent, the next game is Wednesday night. We're playing Washington. What do we need to know?
No, obviously Washington Capitals are a different team than that you've seen in the last last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
So, but again, there's been a lot of good battles. Ovechkin's always ready to go when he comes against team guys like Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane. He elevates his game when he comes against superstars like that. So they're playing a lot better. They got a great goaltender in Braden Holtby. So expect every single game. Expect the best and. As this group, they got a few days to get some practices here and regroup and start moving in the right direction. That's just keeping the puck going straight ahead and outworking the Washington Capitals. If they outwork the Washington Capitals, they'll be just fine.
Hopefully next time we talk to you, Brent, there'll be a couple of wins under our belts. We look forward to that.
Well, me too. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Brent. It's Brent Sopel, everybody. Sopel says. Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us there. You can text us there. Wendy, do you remember earlier in the show when I announced the finalists for the Time Magazine Person of the Year?
Yes, I did remember.
Well, along those same lines, I hold in my hand right now what I consider to be the best headline of 2017. Mm. Of all the headlines you and I have covered in 2017, in my hand right now, Wendy, without a doubt, the finest headline of 2017. I could read it, certainly, but I would prefer if you would read this headline to the kids.
All right, you are just giving it to me.
I'll do the rest of the story if you want, but the headline needs to be read
I'm
by you.
I'm not reading this. I'm Catholic. You have to read it.
They would excommunicate you halfway through this sentence.
I went to church yesterday, too.
Did you?
I did. The
whole
family.
Well, then you can read this.
All right.
You can if you went to church recently, you're fine.
I went yesterday.
I haven't gone for a long, long time. I'd be struck down. There'd be lightning just striking me.
Dylan,
I'd be a cinder.
Dylan is making his confirmation, so he was an usher yesterday.
Oh, was he?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Nice. Here's the headline. The best headline, I believe, of 2017.
Jesus statue's butt was hiding a 240-year-old secret message.
Now, to be honest with you, even if they didn't put a story below this headline, I'd be fine with that, because then you're forced to use your imagination. There is a story attached to it that we can certainly discuss, but I just love the fact that that's a story and somebody had to create that headline. That's fantastic.
A statue of Jesus Christ on display at a cathedral in Spain has been hiding a secret message for hundreds of years in the most unlikely place.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't a headline, it's a butt line.
It's a butt line.
It was tucked away in a hidden compartment in the statue's rear end.
Yes. Now, do all statues have that feature? Because I didn't know that, if that's true.
Well, that's where the trap door came from,
is that,
I think.
Right? Yeah.
I'm not sure. Although it's unusual for many sculptures to be hollow.
Oh. Hollow.
It is not so much to find handwritten documents inside, said historian Efren Arroyo, a member of the Holy Week Brotherhood of Sotillo de la Ribera, according to Science Alert. The statue is called Cristo del...
You can do this.
Miserere.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Oh.
It had been removed from a church in northern Spain for restoration when workers noticed the hidden compartment beneath a cloth that covered the statue's butt.
Oh.
Inside the statue was...
Wait, was the cloth also made of statue material, or was this an actual cloth, does it say?
A cloth.
Oh.
That covered the statue's butt.
Oh, all right. Because I don't know, if I'm creating a statue like this, I don't know, as I'm sculpting it, do I go, well, we're going to need a cloth there, I'll just make it out of statue material, or do I say to a friend of mine who has a cloth store, I need a size 6?
And if the cloth is just there on a statue, it's going to stand out. Of course, you're going to look underneath the cloth.
Yeah.
Inside the statue was a letter penned in 1777 by Joaquin Minguez, a chaplain of the Cathedral of Burgo de Osma.
Mm-hmm.
Minguez's letter discussed the statue and others created by the same sculptor and detailed what life was like in the community 240 years ago. That's pretty interesting.
That is interesting.
Minguez described popular games of the day, including Tetris.
Tetris?
No.
Tetris.
Cards and ball. Those were the games.
That was a fun game back then. Who wants to play cards and ball? Whee!
And noted that typhoid and malaria were common. Oh. That was not a fun game. Typhoid and malaria was not as fun.
Those were the worst selling games back then.
He also revealed that the main crops were wheat, rye, barley, and oats.
Yeah.
The harvest has been plentiful for many a year, Minguez wrote, referring to the vineyards of his hometown. Although the original document will be sent to the archbishop, a copy was returned to the statue's hindquarters for posterity.
Did they not have file cabinets back then? Because I don't know. Why would you put a note there?
I think it's kind of interesting.
It is interesting.
It's like a time capsule, but in
your
butt.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's what it is. Exactly. All right. We'll take a quick break. We've got news and then a lot more shows, so stick around. This is from the WGN Christmas party last year, Wendy. Remember before any of our voices changed and we all sang that?
I was just going to say your voice lessons have paid off, Phil.
They have. Rick Goldschmidt is in the studio with us right now. He is the official Rankin-Bass historian, biographer, archivist, you name it. He knows it. Anything Rankin-Bass. How are you, Rick? Good to see you.
Good. Good morning.
I just saw you on my Facebook feed because a friend of mine, Suzanne's, was at what mall? Orland Hills or somewhere?
The Orland Hills Hallmark.
And she said, you've got to come see this guy. He's got this book. If you like all this stuff that we all grew up with, and that is the key, we all grew up with this Rankin-Bass stuff.
Yeah, it's a big part of a lot of people's lives.
It's really, when you think about it, it's one of the happiest elements of the holiday season is when we were kids, every night the networks would run one or two or three Christmas specials, and Rankin Bass were among the very best.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's lasted so long because there's so much heart and warmth and quality went in before the name went on.
Yeah.
And you don't see much of that anymore in anything.
I have to ask you this because you know this stuff inside out. Wendy and I were talking about this last week. They ran for the first time this year. They ran the Rudolph special, the Rankin Bass Rudolph special. And people were up in arms because they said everyone in that special is so mean. They're mean to the elves. They're mean to Rudolph. And our point was they had to be mean to make that story pay off.
Well, that story was written not down to people. It was written with complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And Santa wasn't your just plain generic Santa. He was a little bit miffed at the elves, and he didn't like the holiday.
He had a business to run.
Right. And I saw this post by Huffington Post.
That's the one I'm talking about.
And I thought, what a bunch of angry people, you know, looking for things in Rudolph that are racist and angry and things. And it's like, give me a break.
Right.
Rudolph's been on for 53 years.
Yeah.
And it has so much heart and so much warmth. It's really the kickoff for the Christmas holidays for a lot of families. So to attack that, you're really stretching it.
Did the song come first, or was the song written in conjunction with the special?
Well, the song came after the storybook by Robert L. May for Montgomery Ward.
Yeah.
And his brother-in-law was Johnny Marks, and he wrote the song. And he didn't want to do it as a television special.
He didn't.
Arthur was his neighbor, and they would see each other at parties in New York, kind of like the Mad Men of, of today. And he said, let's do a television special. And he said, no, I don't want to jeopardize the revenue from the song, because everybody was recording the song at the time. And he thought it would be overexposure. But it really turned out to be what Rudolph is known for, is the television special.
Yep.
You know what's kind of crazy is you kind of look like Hermie. Is that why you now work with Rankin Bass?
And that's a compliment.
It is, so you know, totally. He's adorable.
Yeah. No, no.
Don't you see the resemblance, Phil?
Yeah, sure.
No, I didn't want to be a dentist growing up. I definitely wanted to get into the arts, and that's how I got into Rankin Bass. It was knowing Jack Davis and Paul Coker, who designed the specials, and I said,
and they were writers at Mad Magazine also,
right? Right. Yeah. They were part of the gang of original idiots.
Yeah.
And they put me in touch with Arthur Rankin, and Paul Coker said, give Arthur a call in Bermuda, which I did.
And was he vacationing, or that's where
No, that's where he lived.
Wow.
And he was like, oh, yeah, sure, right. Give me two chapters.
Hmm.
And I sent him two chapters, and then he sent me a tape of his whole life story.
Really?
Yeah.
So you won him over.
Nice two chapters you put together there.
Right.
Very nicely done. The elf is Herbie or Hermie, because we hear both.
It's Hermie, H-E-R-M-E-Y, but it does sound like Herbie when they're saying Herbie doesn't like to make toys.
Yeah, it does.
I think some of the actors must have misread it, and they just left it in, is what happened.
So when you think about it, getting back to the meanness of it, the song itself, they talk about how Rudolph wasn't allowed to play any reindeer games. It has an edge to it, but again, that storyline needed an edge. You wanted to show how being a little bit different can be jarring, but in the end, it can pay off.
Well, Romeo Muller, who wrote the story, the screenplay, and all of the Rankin Bass specials, he was very careful to make these underdog characters that people identified with, and they still identify with today. And there's all kinds of people that identify with those underdog characters.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then to have villains, instead of killing them off, to reform them, like the Bumble and Winter Warlock and all of these great villains, that was genius, because it's much more satisfying to see a villain reformed than to see one killed off or whatever. So he really came up with some ingredients for a satisfying special that'll last 53 plus years.
I love watching it. In fact, my kids were just whining, did we miss it? we didn't, right? I mean, isn't it replayed a bunch of times?
Now they rerun it a bunch of times, but back when we were all kids, you got one chance
to see
it and you were out.
Right. It was on already, but it's on again on the 9th of December. So.
Do you still, I mean, I know you've probably seen it 500 times. Do you still make it a point to just sit down and watch it when it's on?
I do put it on because I'm usually working on things, packing mail or whatever. And I want to see, like, what kind of advertisements they're running during the show. And there's a lot of nefarious things being advertised during it. Well,
what an interesting reason to watch it, though. I'm sorry. That's really interesting.
Well, there was... You know, they try to put on some of the CGI movie trailers during it, you know, to get these kids to come out and see the movies. And I saw this trailer for Ferdinand, which I recognized as a character when I was a kid from Disney.
Is it the bull?
Yeah, it was a bull.
Yeah.
But they got this bull, like, wagging his rear end around, and oh my god, it's like it's the worst.
Is it twerking?
I think so.
Ferdinand the Twerking Bull, is that the movie?
And they put that on during Rudolph, and I'm like, oh, that's very Christmas and heartwarming.
Not really at all. Rick Goldschmidt is here, the official Rankin Bass historian and biographer. We've got a bunch of dates coming up where you can see Rick and purchase his books. We'll give those to you in just a little bit. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
So you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why.
Rick Goldschmidt is here. He's the official Rankin Bass historian and biographer. He's written several books on the topics. You can see Rick at almost any shopping center in the Chicagoland area. You're like the Tiffany of the 2000s, Rick. You're playing shopping center after shopping center. Which ones are coming up? What should we know about if people want to see you?
I'm doing some Hallmark Gold Crown stores, one in Frankfort, one in Homer Glen, Gurnee.
Vernon Hills
and Orland Square Mall.
Miserbrothers.com has your schedule.
Right.
It's all right there.
Can I just tell you, listening to that music, I love musicals, and what a production that music is. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah, Maury Laws was the orchestrator for that, and it just had such a bouncy feel to it, and it's a magical feel.
It really is.
And Jules Bass wrote all the lyrics to the songs, like Put One Foot in Front of the Other and the Heat Miser and Snow Miser songs. Mm-hmm. Songs that people remember more than even the name of the special.
Right. They meant that much to us. All right. So in addition to having really interesting storylines, great characters, fantastic stop motion animation, they went out of their way to get big stars to do the voices. We heard Fred Astaire a little while ago, but Mickey Rooney is involved. Danny Kaye is involved. Burl Ives is involved. They really held no boundaries when it came to coming up with big talent, right?
No, and it's interesting. Arthur Rankin's family was in show business.
Yeah.
So his grandfather was Harry Davenport, who was in Gone with the Wind and many other famous movies. And his father was in Shirley Temple movies.
Really?
And his aunt was an actress. I mean, everybody in his family knew people in the business. So when he went to these big stars who he loved, who he grew up with, and said, this is something that you can show your grandkids.
Yeah.
They were sold.
That's all it took.
Yeah. And Art Carney used to tell me that he loved doing that special because he could show it to his grandchildren, and he loved it just as much as they did.
Now, he did, was it one of the Easter specials?
No,
it
was
a Christmas special?
The Leprechaun's Christmas Gold.
Oh.
And he was Blarney Killicullarney. very Irish dialogue in that special, but he did a great job, and I swear to God, he loved it. And then when I sent them the books, he was just floored with them.
Yeah. Now, on some of them, like the one you just mentioned, that's not in heavy rotation. Is there still a way for people to see the lesser seen ones?
Well, Freeform shows a lot of them repeatedly, during Christmas, but they've stopped showing some of the, like the Little Drummer Boy Book 2 and the Life Adventures of Santa. They used to show all of those, but they're not showing as many of them anymore.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Too bad.
Your books are fantastic and would make great Christmas gifts.
Oh, thanks.
And how many do you have now?
Four. And the Enchanted World of Rankin Bass's anniversary was November 20th of this year, 20 years. And it's 412 pages now. It's like almost to a phone book size, mostly color. And we could hardly keep that one in stock.
Where do we get that?
That's at miserbros.com, like the Heat Miser and Snow Miser. It's miserbros.com.
So when they do this stop motion animation, right, they have to build little miniature sets, and it's all physically there. It's not just drawn out. It's physically there. You went and then bought some of this stuff, right, over the years?
Yeah, I used to have Sister Teresa and Octavia from the first Christmas, which was a nice special from 75 with Angela Lansbury. And then just recently we brought Father Time to Chiller Theater in New Jersey, the Red Skelton puppet.
Really?
And the Red Skelton Museum wants to show it early this year, so we're trying to work out an appearance there. Yeah. They're in Indiana. And we had Smokey the Bear at the Shag Store in Hollywood. James Cagney did a voice in that.
He did?
Yeah, he was the narrator for the Ballad of Smokey the Bear.
Wow.
So it's like all these little puppets are floating around it, but most of them are in Japan. And we just discovered that there's another Santa, which is in Japan on display right now.
A Santa from Rudolph, yeah.
And Mrs. Claus is there, some of the reindeer.
Oh, that's excellent.
Tad Moshinaga was the head animator, and there's an exhibit on him in Japan right now with a lot of his artifacts.
That's beautiful.
Isn't this the coolest gig you have? I mean, come on, you grew up watching this stuff, and now to be working with it, that's so amazing. It's like your dream became a reality.
Well, I'm proud to be part of it because everything is so magical to their stuff, especially Santa Claus is Coming to Town, which we just heard. I mean, that tells you everything you want to know about Santa Claus.
Right, right, right.
And Romeo Muller came up with all of that. How did he ho, ho, ho?
Yeah.
You know, why does he go down chimneys?
Yeah.
You know, things we always took for granted just from what we knew came out of the Rankin Bass specials.
Rick, has Tim Burton at some point said the reason I do the type of stuff I did is because of Rankin Bass? He must have at some
point. Oh, yeah, definitely. I think Tim Burton was influenced by Vincent Price's appearance in Here Comes Peter Cottontail. Yeah. He's so goth in that with his leather jacket and his gloves and his iron tail. That must have been Tim Burton's earliest thing he saw as a kid, and it turned him into wanting to reproduce that in Nightmare Before Christmas and everything else that he's done in film.
I didn't even think of that connection there.
It's so, all right. So for years and years and years, they talked about remaking the Rankin Bass movie Mad Monster Party. They kind of did. Adam Sandler kind of did, right?
Right, right. And they're still talking about it. And I heard that the writers from Analyze This were working on a treatment, and it was in Variety. And Arthur called me up years ago and said that he had sold it to Frankie Avalon's son and Annette Funicello's daughter. And some of those people came and met me in California around that time.
Yeah.
But it's, you know what? You can't remake something that's a classic.
Yeah.
You just can't do it. And the reason that Mad Monster Party is so special is the puppets.
Right.
I mean, how are you going to recreate that puppet feel of Animagic that Rankin Bass did on a computer? You can't do it.
It wouldn't be the same.
No.
No, it would never be the same. Well, it's always fun to talk to you, and these specials mean so much to us. And with the books, I mean, you really get to recapture the magic and enjoy it so much more. So again, Rick, if people want to see you, miserbros.com has your whole schedule, and you can purchase any of the books or anything you have for sale there, right?
Right, exactly. And I'll be at the Hollywood show, which I've never done before, with Jerry Mathers and Tony Dow.
Beaver!
Their first Chicago appearance in March, so I'm looking forward to that because it's a similar show to the ones I do normally, like Chiller Theater and so forth.
Oh, that's going to be fun.
Hey, Wally.
Be so much fun.
Sorry.
Tell Mrs. Cleaver she looks magnificent. Tell her Billy Haskell said she looks magnificent. It's Rick Goldschmidt, everybody. He is the official Rankin Bass historian and biographer. And again, to find out more about his tour, go to miserbros.com, and all the books that we've been mentioning are for sale there. Have a great holiday.
You too. Merry Christmas.
Thanks so much. A quick break, some news, and then Eric Zorn. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. The greatest father in all the land. Zorn, Zorn, Zorn. We sing the praises of Zorn.
We always sing the praises of Eric Zorn because he's Eric Zorn. And how are you, Eric Zorn, from the Chicago Tribune?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually not in the studio.
Wait, you're not here?
Because we see you.
No, hold on a second. We're confused.
I'm actually watching you guys on your live stream right now, so don't try anything funny. No hand gestures.
Nothing.
He's a voyeur.
Yes. So, yes, he is. Why are you? Can you say why you're not here? Or is this top secret?
Yeah, I'm getting ready for the Songs of Good Cheer programs this week. We talked about it last week when you weren't there, and I'm coming down with a cold, so I thought it'd be best just to lay a little bit low and not risk it. So, we still have some tickets for Wednesday night if people are interested. Go to oldtownschool.org. It's a really great sing-along. I don't know if you guys have ever been, but it's a really good thing. And we raise money for charity, and it's a really fun time. So,
some of the guys I play tennis with are actually attending this. They didn't know that I knew you, and they mentioned this to me the other day.
You know Eric Zorn?
Yeah.
He's the greatest father in all the land.
That's what they said, yeah.
They did. Well, I'm glad that that word is spreading about that because it's not really spreading around my house. So.
That's all right. Who needs that? All right, Eric, every Monday as we talk to you, we find out what's on your mind. And this week, what's on your mind has to do with the harassment scandals, most notably Garrison Keillor. What do you think?
Well, it's a very curious story. I don't know how closely you or your listeners have followed it, but Minnesota Public Radio last week has basically erased Garrison Keillor from their archives. Now, Keillor's the guy who's been with the station or with the network, with MPR, Minnesota Public Radio, since 1969, and he's the guy who started a Prairie Home Companion, and he's written a bunch of books, and he's got a show called The Writer's Almanac, a pretty famous humorist.
Yeah,
and suddenly, sort of in one day, he was out. And it was a very vague announcement, sort of saying that it had to do with his conduct dealing with somebody who he worked with, and that was it. And he responded in a very odd way, which is that he sort of announced it first before the radio network did, saying, well, this had to do with me. I was trying to give a woman a consoling hug. And he said, and her shirt was open, and my hand touched her bare back and went up 6 inches. I don't know exactly what that means. Mm-hmm. And he said that they both then recoiled and he apologized.
His hand went up 6 inches. Let's be clear.
His hand went up.
All right. Just want to make sure.
Yeah, but when you're hugging someone, your hand goes up their back. Not
it
usually under
always,
their shirt.
Right.
But no, when you hug someone, your hands move a little bit, guys.
Well, I agree with that. I have never in my many years ever hugged someone and had my hand go inside their shirt by mistake.
Well, yeah. Did they have an open shirt in the back? I'm not defending him. I'm just saying.
It's very weird. Well, here's the weird thing. I mean, and this is what he intimates is the source of this complaint and the source of this incredible punishment. Now, the problem is that there's no alternative narrative. Minnesota Public Radio has not come out and detailed this, and his victim has not come forward and said exactly what happened or why this is such a big deal. It's sort of logical to me that there is more to it than that. And one other thing that makes me think that there's a little bit more to it than that is another part of his response was he said, you know, I'm 75 years old. I'm not going to argue with him about this.
Hmm.
And my take on that is you should argue about it, particularly when you're 75 years old, because this is going to be your legacy if you don't fight back.
Right.
That, you know, you don't have time to repair your image and you know, do a comeback. You need to fight this, and you need to be specific about it. So the fact that he's not arguing about it, that he basically issued a couple of statements and then hasn't said much more. So there's something odd about the entire way this is handled. Now, Keillor himself is sort of an odd guy. I mean, he's socially he's fairly introverted. I've interviewed him a couple of times. I remember I went out to Greektown with him back in the 80s when he was in town doing Prairie Home Companion. Went out with his whole team, and he kind of sat there at the table. And he's actually described himself in some articles as being almost on the autism spectrum. Mm. That he's he's introverted and he doesn't make eye contact, and he says he's not a huggy person. He doesn't like to touch people. And so the idea that he was doing this, it's very strange thing to get your mind around that he's the kind of guy who would do this. On the other hand, I think what we've learned from a lot of these allegations is there is no one type of person who does this, who does sexually harass people, and you don't know people that you think you might know.
Eric, I'm confused. So did he get out ahead of it because something worse is going to come up, or is he just saying, yeah, me and myself too has actually done something that could be construed as harassment?
Well, I don't know. And you know, honestly, the reporting on this has been really fairly weak in terms of what's out there. The reporting in the Minneapolis papers has not been strong about this. The national papers haven't really rushed in to figure out what's going on. In the meantime, you know, like I said, they have erased Garrison Keillor's entire persona at NPR. They've said they're going to change the name of a Prairie Home Companion. He retired from it a couple of years ago, and he passed it on to a new a mandolin player, Chris Thiele. But they're getting rid of the name of that show. He has a show called The Writer's Almanac. They're getting rid of that show, and they're also getting rid of all the archives. And a columnist in the San Jose Mercury compared this to the memory hole, if you remember this, in 1984, where, you know, everything that was inconvenient, and every fact was inconvenient, was basically destroyed, was incinerated, so that you would have no record of the past. And to me, when it comes to art, when you're talking about Woody Allen films or, you know, Louis C.K.'s TV shows, or, you know, movies that were produced by Harvey Weinstein, all these things, there's this effort to get rid of those things, to pretend that they never happened. And I think that's really a bad and dangerous thing to do. This is not like the Confederate monuments. This is truly going into the library, to the archives, and destroying them.
Eric, the same thing is happening over at NBC with Matt Lauer's work. A couple days ago, you could find, you know, interviews that he had done over the years easily, and now they're all but gone. You know, their plan, again, like you said, is to erase almost any evidence that he's ever been there. And Louis C.K. is like that with a couple of the cable services, where he used to go to On Demand and you could find his old shows. And now that's become very, very difficult to do.
Yeah, and I think that's wrong. I think that you can't. I mean, you can certainly judge an artist's behavior and performance, and you can certainly say we're not going to be sponsoring him in the future. But to go and, like I said, try to erase somebody's artistic legacy,
right,
strikes me as wrong, because there's so many people in history who've created art who have been people who don't meet our contemporary standards in many ways.
Right.
And
right.
I think it's okay to contextualize those and to remind those, and it's okay not to employ Kevin Spacey. I don't think it was wrong of Netflix to say we're not going to work with Kevin Spacey anymore and finish up House of Cards.
Yeah.
But I don't think that, for instance, you know, I forget which network it was, which services it was that got rid of all of Louis C.K.'s old shows. I mean, those were really good. I mean, just because he was a bad person in some ways in his private life doesn't mean that he wasn't producing good art and good worthy art.
But then there's the argument of people saying, but then you're cashing in on a person that we now know has done nefarious things. You, by virtue of showing his material, are cashing in on it. What do you say to that?
I say that is an argument that just doesn't hold water to me, because this is art.
Yeah.
and what they've created is art. And people presumably know about this. And if you were advertising and saying, hey, come see, you know, bad guy Louis C.K. and
right.
and he's a terrible man, and look at all the evidence that he's a terrible man in these shows. If you were trying to exploit it in that way,
yeah,
I would say, yeah, that's bad. But I don't see any problem in you know, making money in terms of commerce and the art that he's created.
Let me read, this is a comment that Garrison Keillor made the other day, and Wendy and I discussed this when he made this comment, because it seems very peculiar. He doesn't really explain this comment, but here's what Garrison Keillor said the other day. He said, he wrote, a story that I think is more interesting and more complicated than the version that NPR heard, NPR, Minnesota Public Radio, that there's more to the story than we were being told, but the way he worded it, he said there's more that is interesting and more complicated, but he's never really elaborated on that.
Yeah, and I think that, and of course, the network hasn't elaborated on it either. And right now, there are stories of, apparently, there are hundreds of people up there in Minnesota who are saying they're not going to renew their annual subscriptions to NPR. I mean, they like a lot of public radio stations rely on donations, and people are angry up there because they feel like they haven't been told the full story.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, in one of Keillor's remarks, he talked about two people. And Minnesota Public Radio has only identified one person.
Wow.
So I don't even know. It's just very, very
strange.
This
is weird.
And you know, this guy, like I say, he's 75 years old, and he's got this long, long history. And not everybody's a huge fan of his, of course, but he's written a lot of best-selling books, and he really transformed public radio in a lot of ways. So for him to be suddenly cast out, you'd like to know why. And this is a stance that I try to take when it comes to all these sort of allegations, which is like, I'd like to know what the allegations are and what the person's defense of them is. And in a case like Matt Lauer pretty much copped to it, right? I mean, he said it's not all true, but
enough of it is true.
Yeah. So I feel confident making a judgment about that. I feel a lot less confident making any judgments about this situation.
Have you been following the Jeffrey Rush chapter in all of this?
I have not. What's going on with that?
All right, so Jeffrey Rush, fine actor, he was accused of some things, some sexual improprieties. He denied them, but then over the weekend he stepped down from his position. He's in Australia, they have something that's kind of akin to our Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences, and he's kind of high up in that. And over the weekend, without much explanation, he stepped down from that role.
With his left foot?
Yes.
Wasn't he in My Left Foot?
It's Daniel Day-Lewis.
Now, you think this was an effort just to take the story out of the news? He stepped down, but...
No, I don't think it was...
I think there seems some guilt.
I think there was about to be more disclosed, and he tried to get in top ahead of it by taking himself out of this job.
Damn, sorry.
But one thing that we have seen in most of these cases is that when one story comes out, when one victim comes forth, the dam sort of breaks. And you saw this with Al Franken, with, you know, the one woman came out about this incident that happened in 2006, and I think now there are like six or seven women who are saying somewhat similar things about his behavior. So the pattern emerges, and so when someone is busted for one particular incident, you sort of sit back and go, okay, well, now what's going to happen? Because these people, this tends to be a pattern with people. It tends to be the way they are, not just a total one-off thing.
Yeah, so. No doubt about that. Eric Zorn is our guest. If you want to jump in, we're at 312-981-7200. We'd be happy to talk to you there. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Eric Zorn on the line with us from the Chicago Tribune.
Eric, here's a quick question when it comes to all these men who have... I guess at this point, just been suspected of sexual improprieties. Who rebounds off of this? Do any of these guys come back and get a career? Does any network take a chance on Matt Lauer again or Charlie Rose again? Does Louis C.K. do stand-up again? What happens with these guys down the line?
Well, R. Kelly certainly has managed to resurrect his career after those charges were leveled against him and he was acquitted at trial. If you remember that, was that 15 years ago or so now?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of any other examples of people who have rebounded from this particular kind of accusation. I can't really.
No, there's not too many, are there?
I think it's a really tough thing to get, which is why it is such a serious allegation, why you want to be sure if you're going to join the pack of people condemning them that the condemnation is called for.
Now, in sports, they tend to give people second and third chances. There's a lot of people in sports, in the world of sports, who have done horrible, horrible things.
You're right.
And they seem to rebound pretty easily, you know? So I don't know what the double standard is, but when you think about it, Charlie Rose and Matt Lauer have been considered to be two of the greatest interviewers on television. You'd think at some point some network would go, well, you know, 3 years have passed, 5 years have passed, we can give him another chance, but I don't know this time around.
Well, Bill, that's an excellent point, because you have these guys who are accused of domestic abuse and certainly drug problems and so on.
Dog fights.
And violent crimes and things like that in pro football and other pro sports. And because it's such a performance-based area, and you go out and if you can hit the home run or you can score all the touchdowns, whatever, then that's the measure by which you're judged. And people tend to say, well, okay, he's paid his debt to society, so to speak, and we're going to give him a second chance.
Yeah,
I think we just all like to win and we forget about it.
That's part of
when
it.
When it's convenient for us.
I think that's a big part of it.
Yeah, well, you know, like I say, but the problem with that is when you take someone's work and just shove it all away, then you're not only erasing the future, you've erased the past. So.
Yeah, so true. Can we get a call in really quick, Eric? Gene is on the line and has something he would like to add to this. Hello, Gene.
Hi. I just, the thing that pulled the rug out from under me was the Charlie Rose, the news about his exposing himself, and Mark Halperin.
That one shocked me, too.
He was my nightcap every night, and he was so cultured, and, you know, every famous person from Broadway, politics, whatever, showed up at his table for such in-depth interviews, and it it's just changed my life. I can't believe that this has happened. I really, really can't. And God only knows how many more are to come. I really think the Time magazine cover ought to be about the Me Too movement, because it's going to change the way we live.
Gene, a quick question, since you were such a huge fan of Charlie Rose's. If in a year another network said, well, you know, he sat on the bench for a year, but it's time to give Charlie Rose another chance, would you watch him again, or would it be hard to watch?
Him, I would. I had no connection with most of the others, except I would see Mark on Charlie's show. But for insights about what's going on in politics and the world and the arts and architecture and Broadway and the movies, that was my lifeline. You know, I probably would, but I would never feel the same.
It's a good point when you talk about in politics. Certainly Bill Clinton has been accused of a lot of things that are sort of similar to this. And Donald Trump has been accused of things like this. And it looks like Roy Moore is going to be elected to the Senate after being accused of things. So there's certainly second acts in politics after being accused of
it seems to be an odd situation where it works in some places and in other places. It's the end of your career.
Thank you for calling, Gene. We appreciate your call.
Thank you.
Bye, Gene. Thanks.
Man.
Eric, it's a crazy story and one that just keeps getting weirder and weirder as time goes on, you know?
I suspect it's not the last time we'll talk about it.
I'm positive it isn't. Thank you, Eric. Have a good week.
It's
Eric Zorn of the Chicago Tribune. We'll take a quick break and then we find out what Steve has coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
We're going to the stream. You can join us there. You can listen to the Wintrust Business Lunch with your host with the most, Steve Bertrand.
Oh, go on. Jim and Catherine will be here from Chicago Inno. We like talking to them on Wednesdays.
Today is
Mondays,
Monday.
I mean.
Monday,
and one of the things to bring in, you know, Jim Beam, a Chicago company, is out now with a decanter that will talk to you. It's sort of a takeoff on Alexa.
That's so funny.
And they did something like this last year, too, just sort of a gimmick, you know, kind of a funny thing, which is, you know, good for them. Kind of an old, staid bourbon company.
Isn't that Mila Kunis's
drink
of choice?
Yeah, those sultry ads.
Yeah.
And Lauren Fix here, the car coach, a little bit later to talk about what's going on with Tesla. You guys each have Teslas, right?
Yeah, we got a couple of them.